You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 419. Innocent until I'm proven guilty. Deny everything, deny everything. I'm being framed. It's all a setup. Deny everything, I'm just a spoke of the wheel. Part of the puzzle. Part of the game. I'm being framed. Innocent until I'm proven guilty. Deny everything, deny everything, deny everything, deny everything. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. And that person you heard shouting for joy, we've got someone new stopping by the Punk News Podcast. It's kind of like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, where people just kind of stop on by and hang out and have a good old time. That person exploding with exuberance, that's Haley Bullitt. Haley Bullitt of The Unlovables. Haley Bullitt of Hiccup. Haley Bullitt of the LLC. Haley Bullitt, we are thrilled to have you on the podcast tonight. What's happening in the world of Haley Bullitt? What's going on?
Not much. I'm super excited to be here and talk to you guys again. I had so much fun. That was years ago, really, that I talked to you guys. I remember the thing I was the most enthusiastic about was that Janet Jackson was nominated to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So that I feel like that was like 2 years ago at least.
Haley, what was it? You know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a thing of great debate at Punk News. Some of us think it's stupid. Some of us think it's cool. Some of us think it's flawed, but it's nice to, you know, give praise to people that deserve praise. What's your stance on Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Where do you stand?
I kind of love it. I mean, it's not like every artist I think should be in there is in there, like far from it. But like, I don't think that like illegitimizes it. I think it's super cool. And I've like spent a lot of time at that, like, you know, the Rock Hall in Cleveland, and I like love it every time I'm there. I'm like totally immersed in like all this music that I love. I don't know. I think it's cool.
Well put. And I will say there's certainly nothing wrong with saluting and paying tribute to rock and roll and punk rock and even now hip hop and R&B. We're also here with managing editor Adam White. You all know that. Adam White, what's happening? I heard you saw Effed Up this weekend.
I did, John. I got up. It was the kickoff of the Dose Your Dreams tour in Toronto, so it was their hometown show. The first time they played a lot of that material, the first time they got a lot of the unconventional vocalists, let's say it, that were lined up on that record sort of on stage to sing those songs in front of people. So it was cool. It was really special. And John, this week on the show, this is going to be a better week than last week.
And why is that, Adam? Why is that?
Because John, I'm drinking a green tea right now, and that's it. There's no substance abuse in line.
That's
for
all I take, the green tea.
Last week, Haley, was legalization day in Canada when we recorded. So I thought that. Yeah, it would be really, really fun to do the show super high, but I don't even.
The theme, I get it.
I don't want to listen to it because I'm pretty sure I was rambling and incomprehensible, or at least more than normal. So yeah, it was bad. I'm sorry, listeners. Don't send us mail about that.
So, well, let's reach into the mailbag. You can reach at podcast@punknews.org. I am coming under fire to the right and the left this week. And, Haley, I really want your opinion on this topic. This is kind of a sequel of a previous thing. I'll tell the story quickly. About 4 or 5 weeks ago, I went to see the Dead Milkmen. Tickets were way sold out. They were $30 tickets. They were selling on StubHub for $90. I got 2 for $60, and I couldn't get anybody to go. People wanted to go, but they're like, oh, I got something to do, right? So I said, on the Facebook group, I said, I got a Dead Milkman ticket. Who wants it? This one guy like was asking me all these questions. Are there any openers? What time does the show start? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, do you want the ticket or not? He's like, no, I don't want the ticket. I'm like, oh, thanks. Then this other guy was like, I want the ticket. He's like, do you still have the ticket? I'm like, yes. He's like, great. Is it physical or digital? And I'm like, it's physical. That means it's harder counterfeit. I mean, I didn't say this, but I'm like, good news. It's physical. You can take it home. It's a collectible. You know, it's not a fake because it's real. And he says, oh, I only want digital. I'm like, oh, my God. So anyways, about an hour and a half before the show.
Specific. I only want digital.
What was that, Haley?
That's so specific to say I want the ticket, but only if it's a digital ticket.
Well, honestly, Haley, I never wanted to be an old fart or an old guy, but I think I might be crossing over to the dangerous threshold. I think there might be the kids now and me, and I don't like it. And we're going to talk about that. There's a fundamental disconnect in how information is processed, I feel, and it's really annoying me. And I feel as though I'm in the absolute right and the kids are in the absolute wrong. But you can give me your feedback here. So about an hour and a half before, this lady says, "Do you still have the ticket?" I'm like, "Yes, I still have the ticket." I'm like, "I'll give it to you for $25. And she's like, "Great. I'm outside." I'm like, "Okay, I'll be there in 30 minutes. She's like, "Great, I'll be outside and I'll pay for the ticket." I'm like, "Fantastic." I get there in 27 minutes. I park at minute 27. I look down at my cell phone, and at minute 26, she says, "Sorry, I couldn't wait any longer." And then I'm like, so I send her text messages. I'm like, I'm here. Do you want the ticket? She doesn't reply. So I'm standing outside the venue, and there's like three other dudes standing outside the venue with like tickets, and they all have extra tickets. And this is a sold out show, and tickets are selling on StubHub for $90. So I'm like, no problem. I'll sell this ticket for face value or whatever. No problem. It's way sold out. People are going to want tickets. But Haley Bullitt, in the modern age, people don't buy tickets anymore. Like at the place, they either go on StubHub and see that it's sold out. They get tickets on StubHub, or they just don't go. Like I've got sold. There's four of us. None of us can sell a single ticket. The other three guys are like, "You can have the extra ticket. Or you can go inside." So I'm like stewing in fury because I've got like $670 of tickets in my pocket that I literally cannot give away. You know?
No.
This lady comes over and she's like standing there. And this person walks out and says, "Oh no!" Somebody says, "Is anybody looking for tickets?" And this lady says, "I am." I'm like, "Great! I'll give you my ticket for $20." Then this other young lady says, "Oh, I'll give you mine for free because I've got an extra." And I was like, "Oh my god!" So I'm like, "You know what?" So I sent a text message to this lady, and you could tell this lady that kind of burned me. And I want you to tell me if I'm insane or if I'm being a jerk. Here's what I said. Let me pull it up real quick because I got some real heat on the mail on this, but let me pull it up real quick. Meanwhile, I think Adam's position – oh, here it is right here. I think Adam's position was that although in days past I would have been in the right, now because morality itself has sort of changed or how people interact, I was in the wrong. Here's what I said. I said – oh, it looks like my thing erased it. I said, "You know, that was lame that you stiffed me with a ticket because I could have sold it to somebody else. I hope you don't do that to anybody else in the future. I feel that was rude." And that's all I said, right? And so, first of all, was that an insane thing to do or was that okay? You can tell me.
It doesn't sound insane to me at all, but I'm wondering what Adam's take is and why now suddenly that's like we interact differently and that's like that's cool to ghost on somebody like that.
So the second half of the story is after the show, she sends me a text message. She says, "Oh, I'm really sorry. I'm really not a rude person." And then I said, "All right, I appreciate the apology. You know," she said, "I'm not a rude person. Let me give you $20 for the ticket." I said, "I appreciate it. Don't worry about it." She says, No. I really want to give you money for the ticket." And then at that point, like if I refused again, it would be like rude of me. You know what I mean? So I said, "Fine, you can give me the $20." And she did. I said, "Thanks for making it." You know, and so it was a semi-happy ending, right? But I got some blowback in the mail. But let Adam White will respond, and then I'll get the heat in the mail. Go ahead, Adam.
I'm trying to remember what my stance was on this earlier. You feel like you just like you were like Adam believed this, and I'm like, what? So I don't know. I'm not owning anything right now. I want to get to the mail where they're chewing you out.
Yeah, well, what did they say?
All right. Well, this is from Liverpool Neil, and here's what Liverpool Neil said: "Just got done listening to episode 415, and John, I have many bones to pick with you. John, as to your dead milkman ticket saga, sorry, but you sounded like a complete psycho. Hounding somebody for $20, that's not worth you or her time. As a lawyer, how much do you make per hour? And how much time didn't you spend dealing with this nonsense? Let it go next time. And then you accepted the money after she had already apologized? That's just plain weird. Hell, for $20, I'd eat the cost and not even try to sell the ticket. Not worth my time." So that's Liverpool Neil's first criticism of my actions.
Uh-huh.
First of all, may I never be someone that doesn't appreciate $20, and that not to be greedy, but I never want to lose such touch with the. Well, actually, I kind of do, maybe, but hypothetically, I don't want to lose touch with a common man. Whereas I don't appreciate that $20 is a lot of money to some people. Also, I work hard for my money. Also, I was frustrated. Like the whole day, I was frustrated. And then the lady said, "I'll take the ticket," and I said, "Okay, the contract is I'll be there in 30 minutes." And she totally bailed. And I'm like, I could have sold it to somebody else. So I was just frustrated. And I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I feel as though people are getting flakier in the 2010s. That's what it really is. Like, I'm actually, like, kind of criticizing her for an entire movement of people's morals, and that people are flakier now, and it's acceptable. But maybe I'm crazy, or maybe I'm old, and I'm willing to... And by questioning that, I'm asserting that I am sane, because I'm asking myself, am I insane? That's my stance. So anyways, and then I get some more criticism. Liverpool Neil says, and then you segued from the magnificence of Saccharin Trust to talk about Weezer. Weezer should never be talked about on the podcast, ever. As we have said in Northern England back in the day, bunch of spicy twats. And every band you mention is one of my favorite bands of all time. Your list of favorite bands must be 5,000 bands long. And then to top it off, you played that Jesus song at the end of the show. I didn't know that punk news had turned into a religious comedy hour. Look, I get the song is super dorky and funny. We all get the joke after 15 seconds. But in typical John fashion, you overdid it and played the full monstrosity. Anyways, overall, I love the show. The trauma unit is magnificent. When the three of you guys are on, it sounds like three old friends shooting the shit, not an organized show. This is meant in a good way. Stay free from Liverpool Neil. What I did on that episode is Liverpool Neil was criticizing me for not playing enough punk and ska. So I found a Christian ska song from 1978, and I played that instead. And Liverpool Neil did not like that. We have one more thing in the mailbag, and I'm still taking some hits with regards to when I played at Sunseed doing Jesus, a Friend of Mine. And then we'll play a tune and get to the news. This is from Bobby. Bobby's written in before, and here's what Bobby said. Sorry about that. One second. Anyway, Adam, any other comments or criticisms or responses to Liverpool Neil?
I usually want to defer to Neil on the things that he has a problem with. So if he thinks that you're acting like a psychopath, I'm gonna go with that.
And here's what Bobby said. John, why do you play all this random shit? I know you can easily say skip it, but I feel as though if you discount the completists with this selfish whimsy, I feel as though you discount the completists with your selfish and whimsy decisions. And that's Bobby giving Johnny G a hard time on the podcast. So I don't know. Maybe this week I'll play some straight up punk. How about that? You know, I hate to concede.
Well, when is the last time you've played something that has not been either like a 10-minute dub song or, you know, something that is like challenging sort of as a fuck you to whoever's having to listen to it or a joke?
Well, I did play Sial like 3 weeks ago, which was that not Malaysian, not Filipino, not Malaysian. Where were they from? Was it Philippines? I think it was, no, Singapore. I played that Singapore punk band Sial, which was really cool. I mean, that's as punk as it gets. You know what I mean?
All right. That's an outlier, though. That's not a pattern.
All right, fine. I'll play.
You'll revert to mean, which is you playing like a 35-minute dub song or something.
Fine, I'll play something short and mean right now. This is a track by Devil Master. Devil Master is a new-ish Philly band, and they play songs about how they think Satan is cool. And in contrast to Sunseed, who had a song "Jesus is a Friend of Mine," and what's interesting about Devil Master is they're influenced by a band called Zao. Zao is one of these super obscure Japanese hardcore bands that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. Devil Master is kind of the American interpretation of that. And one of the things that I guess that's interesting about them is their lyrics are purposefully obscured, so you can kind of make their lyrics what you want them to be, if you will. Anyway, this is a track by Devil Master. I think we'll probably do Gates of Pain by Devil Master, and then we'll be back. We'll be right back. Devil Master out of Philadelphia. Let's get into this week's news on the Punk News Podcast. Adam White, can you kick us off? Because I'm pulling up the story list right now.
Yeah, so the first thing you wanted to talk about here was that, so over the past weekend, Ty Siegel, he had an art exhibition that was called iRange Rainbow. It opened at the Crying Clover Gallery in L.A. Now, at the opening reception, as a surprise, he released an entire new album called Orange Rainbow. John, I'm going to stop right here. It was the name of his damn thing Orange Rainbow, and you just can't spell in your article? Or is this clever...
It's Orange Rainbow, like the food and the color, orange.
Yeah, what was the name of the art exhibition?
Orange Rainbow.
Oh, well, you need an editor. Okay, so you can go back and read the story. So at the opening reception,
he released an album. Take the reins, Adam, by all means. I've got no problem with you dedicating your time to copy editing my article.
So he releases an album with the same name as the exhibition, which is Orange Rainbow with an O. Now, at this time, the release was only on cassette and only with a limited run, 55 copies. Now, obviously, it was sold out completely, you know, taken, gone at that event. However, he did release three other albums this year that are entirely readily available if you want those. And a fourth, a covers album, which is called Fudge Sandwich, is just coming out. It's probably out by the time anyone listens to this show. So the art show that he is doing, it runs through November 18th. Now, John, you had a whole bunch of things you wanted to lead off with this, so I'll let you jump in. So, how do you want to take this little Ty Siegel story here?
There's a lot of ways to take this. This is a hyper limited release, and I've got some albums that are like hyper limited stuff. And the question is, with hyper limited things, often an artist will do something hyper limited and then release like a more readily available copy. But sometimes they don't. Especially guys that are very productive bands like Bors that put out like five albums a year, or even like the Melvins, they'll put out like a release of like 100 and that's it. And then that's all, that's all they're ever going to be. The question is, if you're an artist of some renown, like Ty Siegel is putting that out, is that a clever, interesting artistic statement that makes it special for the people that are hardcore enough to actually get it? Or is it kind of like a self-indulgent marketing thing? Or is it somewhere in between? Or does it make an unnecessary market for middlemen to make money off your art, kind of just jacking the price up just to jack the price up? I don't know, Haley. What's your stance on like hyper limited releases? Cool artistic statement or indulgent FU to the fans or neither?
I would say I'm like 90% into this. Because it was like, especially because it was part of an art show, then it sort of makes it feel like the limited release cassette was like kind of part of the art show. I think it's cool. Plus, I like, I've heard some people like sounding off about how stupid cassettes are, but I don't know. I like cassettes. It's like affordable, first of all. And it's like just a cool, you know, you get artwork. It's a thing you get to like touch and hold. So I'm like, I'm kind of into the whole cassette movement. I mean, he's put out a lot of music this year. So it does make you wonder, like, is all of it good? But I don't know. It's, if he has the resources to put out every single song he thinks of, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have to buy it if I don't think it's going to be his best work, you know. I think you touched on the only thing I have a problem with, which is that it's going to end up on eBay for like way more money than it should, and somebody's going to be taking advantage of like people that are like real completionists and just like have to have everything that he put out. Like that's the part to me that gets kind of like scummy or ugly about like these really hyper limited releases. But other than that, it's like, I don't know, I'm into it. Put out your music, why not?
Actually, Haley, you mentioned one thing that I also, that was very on topic. You know, some artists, like some artists will only put out one album every 6 years, and it's amazing because they've got lots of other stuff or stuff they don't like, they never complete, and they only put out the best of the best. Ty Siegel, I mean, honestly, like I'm not a hater, but I'm not a huge fan. He puts out everything, like everything. Now, I mean, the question, like, there's the photography thing. Like, most famous photographers, if you go to their photo show, like, they won't have, like 2,000 pictures. They'll have, like, 20. And the idea is maybe they've got junk, but just because you see the 20, you think every single shot they take is amazing. I mean, as a fan, do you love it when artists put out everything, even some of it's okay? Or do you want bands to, like, self-edit? You know what I mean?
You know what's funny is that, like, I hadn't really thought about it. I don't think I have a stance on it. But I think, like, if you look at the artists that I love, they are the artists that put out fewer releases. Because I don't always have – I don't have the patience to sort through, like, six albums to find, like, two albums worth of songs that I like. So when I'm listening to a release, I'm listening to, like, do I like all these songs? Now, if I really only like one song, there's part of my brain that's going to, like, write that band off a little bit, you know? So I think the bands that I'm, like, super passionate about and that I get everything that they put out, they are the bands that just put out, they're more selective about what they release, you know? So that it's all, like, it's their good shit. It's, like, the shit that's really going to have impact.
Yeah. I think I agree with actually the best example is Hawkwind. Hawkwind puts out so much stuff and so much of it's redundant. But on the other hand, like, Melvins put out tons of stuff and it's all great. But I think it's because the Melvins, I mean, I think a part of it, like, with the Melvins is, like, they don't have a job. Their job is the Melvins. So all they have to do all day is record music, you know? So maybe they do weed out the junk, but because all they do have to do all day is record music, they're able to create music at a more rapid pace. I don't know, Adam. What do you think?
It depends on the kind of artist that you are, and you can absolutely sell the, like, prolific tortured genius persona and put out lots of stuff, including the junk. But you have to be able to sort of brand that as, you know, as a That's a symptom of your madness, right? It's like one of my favorite artists right now is a guy out of Montreal who used to be a one-man band he's not now. He has a band. He has a several-man band called Paul Jacobs. And so Paul is like a psych garage rock guy. And he is super prolific. Like, over the past 3 years, something like 3 LPs, 6 EPs. And I interviewed him once and he said that, oh, he's got, like, you know, 200 songs sitting on a home recorder that he has no idea what he's doing with yet. And he's not putting out, you know, he's not releasing 200 songs or anything, but he is releasing, you know, way more than your typical band that would say, go into the studio and pay a producer and, you know, get art made and do a release tour and all the kind of conventional things. He's doing a lot of this himself as a DIY guy, recording it himself, releasing it himself. He's doing the artwork himself. So when you look at his body of work, you really get the impression that, like wow, this guy is, he's just driven to keep putting out stuff, right? And it just, the look of all of it speaks to that. And I think that's different than, say, you know, let's say you were a pop punk band and you didn't actually have that many good songs, but you just released all the crap anyways. That doesn't quite work the same way. You listen to someone like Jacobs, and I think someone like Seagal here too. Is it Seagal or Siegel? John, I had no idea who this person
Seagal,
was.
Ty Seagal.
Like Steven Seagal. Okay, cool. So if you look at, like, someone that's releasing a lot, like releasing prolifically like that, it's okay if there's some weird stuff in the mix, because that's part of the overall feel of it. So, like, if I go back to the example of Jacobs, like, there's releases where there is some crazy, you know, noise tracks that you would never want to go sit down and listen to as an individual song. But as far as the piece that you're listening to, like of the composition of the EP, okay, it makes sense that there's, like, a weird, you know, psych freak out at this point in it, right? So again, it depends on the kind of artist. So you can do that, but I think you have to kind of commit. Are you going to be the mad recording, you know, OCD guy, or are you going to be, you know, a proper studio band? I don't think you can do both. Oh, that brings me to my second thing I wanted to bring up here was that you seemed a little bit incredulous that the punks didn't know who Ty Seagal is. I don't know who this is. Should I have known who this is?
Honestly, yes. I mean, this is another thing that's been... I feel like this is the John Complains podcast, this episode. I don't mean it to be. We'll talk about stuff that I think is cool later on. But, like, I'm not a huge Ty Segall fan, but I kind of notice, and I guess to a degree, well, to a degree, Punk's always been this way, but they're like, who's Ty Segall? Like, I've never heard of this guy. Like, if you're into indie and all and underground music, you should know who Ty Segall. Like, Ty Segall is, like, pretty, he's kind of as big as it gets underground, like in the garage rock and the indie scene. Like, he's all over Pitchfork, and not that you should care about Pitchfork necessarily, but like if you're interested in alt music and non-pop music, non-mainstream music, you should know who he is, because he's kind of considered one of the most, I guess, moving and influential and kind of like ahead of the curve modern rock guys. You know, he's kind of punk rock, but he probably doesn't call himself a punk. And not to mention, almost all the first wave punks love him. Rollins loves him. Keith Morris loves him. Jello loves him. I could take him or leave him. But the point being is, though, I feel as though, to a degree, sometimes punk is used as an excuse to stick your head in the sand, when I kind of think punk rock should be viewed as glasses that you put on to view your outside surroundings. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? I think being interested in punk rock and being a punk rocker doesn't mean you ignore outside culture. It means you interpret outside culture from the core values as generated by punk, however you might define those core values. And I realize that's a very ambiguous and kind of academic, you know, hoity-toity definition, but I kind of think that's the way you got to spin it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I don't really care that I didn't know who this person is, because my reaction to finding out who this person is was not to get angry, which is what you would have seen in the Punk News comments if you looked at anyone there. And this is the general thing whenever you post something that isn't, you know, straight up, you know, a fucking fat wreck band, is that you get people deciding that they're going to be incredibly snarky about the fact that other stuff exists in the world. So I think it really depends on how you take stuff. So punk isn't really an excuse to be a dick.
Yeah, I have no patience for that. It's like, because Adam, it seems like the way you were about it was like, oh, I've never heard of this guy. Like, who is this guy? Like, let me check it out. Let me figure out if it's a thing that I like or not. Yeah, I don't get the like, I don't know about that shit as like a, you know, when people wear it as like a badge of honor. You know, you're like, why are you proud of that? Like, you don't have to be like embarrassed that you haven't heard of this guy, but like, why are you so proud that you like only listen to this like really, really tiny niche of bands? And like, here we're talking about an artist where like, yeah, like I agree, John, like sonically, I mean, I don't need to get all this guy's albums, but like, there's definitely crossover with punk. Like, It is just funny to me when people are like so like they love that they don't listen to anything else but this like really, really tiny sliver of music. I just don't get why you would be so like into that. Although I guess I probably was when I first got into punk. Maybe that's like a phase you have to go through?
Well, there is also a phase that happens that is a strictly among the Punk News audience phase, which is where people will look at it and go like, I don't know who that is. Fuck John Gentile. But they have they'll sort of react to everything that way. Like, I didn't want mustard on this sandwich. Fuck John Gentile. Right. So that's that's a particular affliction that our readers have.
Well, I agree with Haley. I feel like I'm back in high school where you're wearing, like, I don't know, a Misfits shirt. And you know, some jock kid or whatever, he's like, Misfits, I never heard of them. They can't be very good. You know, I listen to Dave Matthews. Misfits suck. I never heard of them. It's like, that's the same mentality, Holmes. It's like, ah. Yeah. Anyways, I'll stop complaining about stuff because this next story is cool. Speaking of famous Canadians, in addition to Adam White, finally, after 3 or 4 runs for office, DOA's Joe Keithley has finally been elected. I think he ran for mayor Burnaby. He ran for mayor. He ran for some other thing. He actually ran for something pretty big that Adam White can probably inform us about. He didn't make it. He lost by a large margin, I think, every time he ran in the past 3 or 4 times. So he finally decided to run for city council. And although running for city council might not seem like that big of a deal, it actually, all 7 members were part of the BC club, basically. It's some political party in Barnaby, the Barnaby Citizens Association. All seven members were members of the Barnaby Citizens Association, what sounds like it's like the community organization, but it's actually a political party. So all seven were members of that. Joe Keithley ran, and he broke the monopoly, if you will. So now there's six members of the Barnaby Citizens Association, and Joey Keithley, who's of the Green Party, and I think he's the first Green Party member to be in the city council. And I got to say, congrats to Joe Keithley. You know, like he took a lot of flack when he ran for the different offices. People were like, you know, you're wasting people's money, you're wasting your time, you're never going to get elected. You know, but you know, I mean, he kind of, you know, took his hits, you know, took the insults, you know, and just kept trucking forward, you know, set goals that he could achieve and achieve those goals. And I mean, honestly, like, I do think that he's really dedicated to local politics. I mean, that's been his thing. That's been his thing for the past 40 years. Talk minus action equals zero. So I don't know, Adam. Maybe you have more insight on how Canadian politics works.
Yeah. So I had to learn something when this story came out, because I thought it was very strange that there were all of these party affiliations being talked about on a municipal level. But I don't know exactly how that works in the States. But like, if you say have like a mayoral race in Philadelphia, do the mayoral candidates have parties?
Yes.
That they are like absolutely. But they're actually affiliated with parties. Like they're not just people.
Yeah, you have a Republican and a Democrat running against each other. That's almost
maybe an independent. So in Canada, that is really atypical on the municipal level. I mean, you'll have people who are on the left or on the right, and you can extrapolate, you know, which federal left or right party they would probably cast their vote for. But there isn't party affiliations at the city level in Canada at all, except for Vancouver, Montreal, and well, Burnaby, which is right next to Vancouver. Like that's it, apparently. So the fact that you know, he's on city council as a member of the Green Party, and that everyone else in the city council were the member of this local to Burnaby political party, it's super weird to me and was hard to parse on this. So Joey Shithead, he first ran in 1996 for provincial office in BC. I don't know what the American analogy is. So, you know, something on the state level. Like a state representative or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big office. Like, that's pretty tough to get.
Yeah, so he ran for that, and he did not get into that. And he's run for, I want to say, like three or four things over the years. So he was up until this summer actually running for mayor of Burnaby, and then he dropped out of the race in July and endorsed the guy that actually did end up becoming the mayor. At the point where he dropped out of that race, he kind of slid into a council position race. So yeah, Joey's been running for shit forever. So it's cool that he's got in, and it is amazing that there is someone who everyone knows as Joey Shithead that is going to have to put on a suit and tie and go, you know, debate housing ordinances and things like that. That's wonderful.
Well, I feel good. Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
No, I was just saying, like, I feel good for him, because like John touched on like the DOA slogan, but like his whole thing has been, you know, don't just talk about stuff, actually go out and do it. So it's nice that he did.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I feel like it is like he's brought that whole punk rock ethic, like, to politics. Like, it's your, you know, it's like you start with your local scene, and like, you have to believe that that matters. Like, you have to believe that the things that you do locally have an impact, like, in a wider way at some point. And so he's like, yeah, he's like immersed himself in local politics. But I want to ask you guys a question, because I really like, they still put out albums, right? I mean, they put out a song like right before our 2016 elections that was all like, I forget if it was like Fuck Donald Trump or like,
it was called Fucked Up Donald.
Fucked Up Donald.
Yeah.
So
like, yeah, and they just had a full length that they released earlier this year too.
Yeah, so it's not like his punk, it's not like that's part of his past that he's like covering up, like that's very much a part of his present, and like he still got elected anyway. So like, yeah, maybe Adam, I don't know, I want, maybe because you're Canadian, like, is that just like, are Canadians cooler? Like, are they able to look past that? Because like, I know in New York State, we've got a guy running for Congress, this brilliant, he's like a Harvard law grad and a Rhodes Scholar, this guy Antonio Delgado. And he, his shitty fucking Republican opponent is running all these attack ads against him because like years and years and years ago, he used to be a rapper. And like not even, so like all these ads are trying to make it out like he's a thug or like he's violent. Like, you know, the worst you can really say of these lyrics are that like occasionally he calls for a revolution. You know, like that's that was really like the worst of what he's saying. But like, so I got myself wondering when I was reading about Joey Shithead, like I was like, is that the difference between Canadian voters and American voters, or like Canadian voters less uptight? Or is that the difference between a black man running in politics and a white guy in his 60s?
Mm. Yeah, I think the racial aspect, I would imagine, like whenever they're going, oh, he's a thug, right? That's code.
Yeah.
So there's that whole part there. I don't know if like Canadians are cooler. I want to say we are, but no, I think that it's more, I think with any of these musicians that are running, it's sort of how much they're going to own what their past was. Mm-hmm. And if they can play it off like it's not something they're running from, then it doesn't become a vulnerability. Like in Texas, right? Everyone tried to bring, like they tried to make attack ads out of the fact that, you know, Beto O'Rourke was in a punk band at one point. Yeah. But then he just leaned into it and it made him seem like the coolest guy. So, you know, I think it's got a lot to do with like how much of that you're willing just to like embrace and how much of it you're going to try to act embarrassed about. Like if you make it sound like, oh, it's the indiscretions of youth, then maybe that makes you sound flaky. I don't know.
Yeah.
The whole city council thing is, I mean, we just had elections here and it's a strange thing because we're, I don't know, like the city I'm from, like we had an election yesterday and we're like, it's sad. Like we have like 39, I think it was like 39% was the turnout for our municipal elections. It's the same, I'm in Niagara Falls and it's the same city councilor people who have been involved for like 30 years in some cases, like people in their 80s, they're all being reelected on name recognition. And I'm just like, oh, like I'm so disenfranchised by this. But then we have in Ontario, we have something called regions, which I think are like a county in the States. Mm-hmm. And so there was a council, like a regional council that was also being that also had an election at the same day. And some people I know, a friend of mine actually was just elected as a regional councillor, and she got in very much on this, you know, council is corrupt and needs to be burnt to the ground platform. And it was super cool to see her get in. But then I saw her tweet today that, you know, oh, people are already talking to me about re-election and it's the first day. And for some reason that just like pulled all the wind out of me. I was just like, no, I'm like you're supposed to be in there to blow shit up. You're not supposed to immediately start to worry about the next election. This is the problem.
Like being in the machine. Yeah.
It's like you're in the machine for one day and they're trying to grind you up.
Yeah.
No, I don't know if that, No, go on, Josh.
Not that this is news to anybody, but I mean, and we're not gonna, you know, cry about Trump. I mean, Trump's bad. Everyone knows that. But the dude is like, he does like one rally a week. It's like no president has ever done that before, and it kind of echoes another guy who wasn't a president that had a lot of rallies. You know what I mean? It's like it bothers me that people don't see through that, or they do see through that and they like the end result, so they embrace that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just think like politics should be more like Logan's Run, where just at some point you get vaporized.
My dad says there should be no such thing as re-election, and maybe that's not a bad idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of awesome things, Noun have released a surprise new album. Noun is Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Females, and it's basically her doing everything that's not Screaming Females. Sometimes it's electronic, sometimes it's punk, sometimes it's acoustic, sometimes it's singer-songwriter, sometimes it's even goth. I'm a huge fan of Screaming Females, and I'm a big fan of Noun. The new Noun album is called Slug, and it's a collection of home recordings. Some of them are acoustic, and some of them are actually like really neat electronic experiments. It's got two Patsy Cline covers, and I want to say, a bona fide appreciation of AC/DC, that is not a wacky cover, but kind of like a straight up cover, or a genuine recontextualization of Shoot to Thrill. I'm a huge AC/DC fan. I'm a huge Screaming Females fan. I'm a huge Marissa Paternoster fan. And I guess what I like about the AC/DC cover is you could argue that AC/DC is very macho when it's, you know, guys are this and girls are that, you know, because almost every AC/DC song is about drinking, fighting, or having sex with women. And so it's interesting that I think Marissa Paternoster takes the skeleton of that song and rejiggers it and makes it her own without insulting the song or saying it's bad, which I mean, that's just my interpretation, but I think that's real cool. So anyways, Screaming Females are awesome. Noun is awesome. But here's what is – and it's actually out on Mike Abate of Screaming Females, his label. His label is called State Champion Records. What I find is interesting is I saw Joe Jack Talcum this past weekend. Joe Jack Talcum, of course, is one of the Dead Milkmen, one of the primary songwriters of the Dead Milkmen and the founder of the Dead Milkmen. Dead Milkmen will easily sell out a 500-capacity venue. Easy, right? Joe Jack Talcum – sometimes might only draw 25 people. You know what I mean? Maybe less. And that kind of blows my mind because it's like he is. I mean, he's not the only member of the Dead Milkmen, and he's not the only contributor. Paternoster certainly is not the only contributor to Screaming Females, but she's a big part. Joe Jack is a big part of the Dead Milkmen. It always surprises me, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm saying it's an interesting phenomenon, if you will, is you would say, oh, Dead Milkmen, they pack out 500 people. So one of the main songwriters and the guitar player by himself, that would draw a whole lot of people too. But the answer is no. Simply because it's not called Dead Milkmen, not that many people show up. Screaming Females, they'll do 200, 300, maybe even 500 people at a show, you know, depending on where they're at. You know, Philadelphia, 500 people. But Noun, maybe 20, maybe 30. But it's the guitar player and singer of the band, and that blows my mind. And is it strictly marketing, or is it that people, like, love bands that much that just one person with a guitar is not as interesting as a full band? I honestly don't mean this as like an attack or an insult, but I truly don't understand why the main guitar player and singer in a band sells so many fewer tickets than just the band. I can understand half as much, but I don't get one tenth as much.
I mean, I think it goes back a little bit to our conversation before where, you know, I think, you know, both of these artists that you're talking about, like, they're using these solo projects as like outlets to express like different shit than they express with their band, you know, and like maybe more thoughtful stuff or maybe more experimental stuff or maybe stuff that's like a little bit more challenging. And so I do wonder if it's just some people are like listening to it and they're like, oh, like this doesn't shred the way Screaming Females does. Although she does shred on some of those Noun songs, make no mistake. But it's, you know, I mean, she said she uses it as an outlet to like challenge herself to write different kinds of songs. And maybe not all the listeners are like up to the challenge of like listening to all of that or something, you know?
That's probably true. There's a weird marketing aspect to a lot of this where we're all kind of in music fandom. So if the singer of a band that you like, you know, goes and does something, you're probably going to be aware of it. And even if they're not doing the thing under the name of the band, you're probably going to go see it or go check it out. I think there's a pretty big middle ground of not super passionate music fans that aren't into the minutia of it, that aren't following these people on social, that aren't, you know, tuned into all the weird little side projects and things like that, where, you know, whatever the main band does is the thing. And they just don't encounter a lot of this stuff. And, you know, like Dead Milkmen is a great example where like that's a band that, you know, has a name that a ton of people that probably aren't necessarily into music actively anymore, but at one point in their youth would recognize, but maybe they wouldn't recognize Joe Jack. So yeah, we've talked about this. I'm trying to think. We talked about this recently, John. There was an example of someone touring or doing something where a very similar kind of scenario came up. trying to figure out what the fuck it was. But yeah, I think that this, no, we were talking about Misfits on one of the recent episodes, and like why those Misfits shows like are what they are, and trying to unpack that. And just that there is, you know, there's a gigantic amount of people that are tuned into a band's brand, you know, more than they would be, say, like other, you know, comings and goings of the music world. And that's not the life we lead. So it's sort of hard for us to see it, but I think it's there. And I think it's pretty big.
I just recall this is, I was worried that Joe Jack Tackham hated me because we threw the summer soiree and I couldn't tell if he was happy or not because Joe Jack Tackham is hard to read. I saw him this weekend and I'm happy to report Joe Jack Tackham does not hate me, which honestly took a big load off my shoulders because the last thing I wanted to do was bum out Joe Jack Tackham, that's for sure, you know. Second, can we just, you know, Screaming Females and Paternoster, they friggin' rule. I mean, really, they rule. That band is so good, and Paternoster and the whole crew is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
Somebody play a song. Haley, what do you got? Hit us with a tune.
Oh, what do I want to hear? I'm super into this new song, and then I was delighted to see, actually, that you guys had written about it on Punk News. It's this Drug Church single that just came out on Licensed Hall Monitor. I'm, like, so into this song. It, like, reminds me of, like, the old, like, Les Savvy Fav. I don't know if you guys remember those guys from like the 90s, but it reminds me of that, like yelly vocals with like really smart, like melodic, interesting guitar hook stuff happening. I don't know. I'm super into it.
Darker than a
and that was Drug Church, and that was a cool track. We're going to do a sequel of a story from last week. Last week we talked about how Tom DeLonge, he's got this associate, he's somehow an investor in this club called To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, and it's basically like, it's a company, I think they claim they're non-profit. It's a company that researches aliens and if there are aliens on Earth or in space or anywheres, and they're $38 million in debt, which is kind of crazy. As we said last week, I don't know how you get $38 million in debt looking for aliens. You buy a telescope and you look through it. You know, I mean, that's like, what, $40? But and so everyone had a good chuckle and everyone had a good laugh. Like, oh, Tom DeLonge, he's up to his wacky hijinks again. But a lot of people mention this, and they brought up this point, is at what point does it stop being wacky hijinks and funny, and at what point should we be concerned or even do something for someone that might have some issues? I mean, it's no secret that Tom DeLonge has been doing a lot of weird stuff, well, what I would classify as weird stuff, and maybe it's weird in a good way, and maybe it's bad in the weird, bad in the bad way. Like, remember, like, last year he claimed that he was emailing with the White House about secret alien, like, invasions and whether or not actually aliens were hanging out on Earth, and he had contacts in the White House. And he puts out, like, a lot of, like, these weird missives that kind of make no sense. A good parallel is HR of the Bad Brains, where, like, HR is, I think I don't know, I'm not a mental health, you know, professional, but I think he's not doing well. And like, he'll post these videos on Facebook that make no sense whatsoever, and it's clear that, like, he's not with it. And you could argue, well, that's all right. You know, not everybody has to conform to a certain mode of behavior. However, I feel as though no one is kind of, like, looking out for HR or maybe even Tom DeLonge's best interest and saying, is he just a different person and that's fine? Or is he a person that needs help and we should do something? I feel HR doesn't have that person in his life. I could be wrong. And maybe, like, and the richer and more powerful people get, the harder it is to reel them back in. I mean, Michael Jackson might be a bad example, but Michael Jackson was up to some, and I'm not even talking legal stuff, who knows, but even like legal stuff, like he was up to weird stuff. He was taking way too many, you know, injection drugs. You know, he was deeply in debt with his zoo, and there was no one in his life that said, Michael, you know what, maybe you're not doing well, maybe you should, you know, sort of get this figured out. So as fans, do we have enough information to say, Tom DeLonge, you're not doing well, you should get some help? Is that our duty, or is it always, or should, or is that us, you know, sticking our nose where it doesn't belong? And so if our favorite artist is doing something weird or strange and we think it's funny, we can laugh along. Like, do we have a duty to look out for bands we like, I guess, is the question. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's complicated. Because, yeah, because we have no way of knowing what's going on with him, right? We have no way of knowing. It's certainly, the way he speaks certainly sounds like, I think, what we all are familiar with as, like, the kind of things you hear from someone that is, like, suffering from, like, manic depression or schizophrenia. It's that sort of, like, that just, like, bloated and, like, totally weirdly, like, inflated sense of self and what you know and who you're connected to and that you're so special and you have access to all this information or these connections that other people don't have. But then at the same time, like, he does have, like, I mean, I guess I didn't totally fact check the website, but it appears that he has people, like, really from, like, the Department of Defense and, like, ex-people, like, from, like, the CIA working on this project. So I don't know if he just, you know, offered them money. Maybe that's where part of this huge deficit comes from. Like, I'm trying to figure out how he got all these legit people to work on this project with him. And is it mental illness? I mean, he's also, right, like, hasn't he said in the past that he has a problem with, like, or I guess in the past I know he had, like, a problem with, like, pill addiction, right, from a back injury or something. I don't know. I feel like it's complicated. I mean, it's funny because it's alien stuff, and you, like, you want to laugh about it. Like, you feel like you should be able to laugh about it because we don't have any real evidence that he's, like, really is suffering from a mental illness. But then it, you know, it does sort of seem clear that he probably is. I don't know.
It's hard for me to discount the comedy that he's $38 million in debt looking for aliens. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like something you do in your backyard for like $12. You know, like $38 million.
I feel pretty comfortable not taking any responsibility whatsoever in something like this. You figure like if you are a man that has this much money and this much fame, there are people who are closer to you than some dipshits on a podcast that should be intervening if you are, you know, clearly in need of help. But if all of those people are either enabling you or not helping you, and you have gone and turned this obsession, whatever the root cause of it is, into a public spectacle, I don't know what we can do but react to the public spectacle. Like, I feel like we go too far in the other direction if we're going to look at every artist that does something strange and then we start to, you know, diagnose them with conditions that we're not qualified to actually, you know, diagnose them with. And there's a part of me that worries, like, maybe he's actually really fucking serious about these aliens and he's just really bad with money. And it's not helping that we're just like, we're going to infantilize him by chalking it all up to him being ill. I don't know. I'm pretty comfortable that, you know, if he gets into further trouble, no one's going to show up and be like, Adam White, why didn't you do more for Tom DeLonge? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I could do.
Two things, and there's always something that I'm always weighing. Like, I'm a huge George Clinton fan. I think George Clinton is doing relatively okay, but he's weird. And just because he's weird doesn't mean he's in danger or he's mentally unhealthy. Like, some people are just different, and that's how they're made, and it's unfair to them to make them conform to a certain mode of behavior, as long as they're not, like, hurting anybody, which I don't think George Clinton is. The other thing is, if you've spent $38 million and haven't found any aliens, does that prove that aliens don't exist? That's the question. Or does it just prove that you know how to blow $38 million?
I don't know.
Well, listen. God,
there's so many things that we could spend $38 million on.
There are. Oh. Some Misfits records I'd like to get. Anyway, speaking of cool records, Neighborhood Brat, they've put out two tracks. They've got a new album coming out called Karl Marx Neighborhood Brats. They were broken up for a little while, and they're back together now. The new album is out November 16 on Dirt Cult Records. The two new tracks are called Dumpster Values and Late Stage Capitalism. And people, these tracks are rippers. And Neighborhood Brats, if you ask me, is one of the more interesting modern hardcore bands. They're one of the bands that kind of, you know, somewhat adhere to the standard hardcore formula, but they deviate from it somewhat, and they make interesting and exciting and charging music, and I think this is cool.
So, jumping over to the next media story I want to tell you guys, speaking of dirt stuff, Dirt Nap. So, Dirt Nap Records is going to be releasing a compilation of the revered Denton, Texas-based garage punk act, the Marked Men. It's picking up, how many tracks on the list here? 16 non-album tracks that the band released between 2003 until 2010, along with two new unreleased tracks. The compilation will come out on the 23rd of November. It's called On the Other Side. If you go to Punk News and look it up, you can find a stream of the song Nothing's Changed. Now, this is called On the Other Side, which is referencing the On the Outside record that they released. And this is not comprehensive from me looking at the track list. Like, there's other Marked Men stuff that were non-LP tracks that are still not on here. So, you know, who knows? Maybe this is the first in a series. But the Marked Men are people love the Marked Men. So, there.
All right. And let's close this up. I think maybe we'll talk about this one a little bit more. The Coat Hangers, one of my favorite new bands. They've been around for 10 years, but they're new to me. I love the Coat Hangers. Their last album was called Nosebleed Weekend. They put out an EP after that called Parasite. And they've been on tour. They put out a live record. It's real cool. Coat Hangers, they kind of got like maybe a Joan Jett meets Hole vibe, or, you know, maybe not too much of a Distillers, but a little bit of Distillers, you know, just, you know, kind of edgier, straight up punk with a little bit of pop in there, pop rock in there, if you will. They're working on a new album. The lead singer, what the hell's her name? Not Meredith is the bassist. Stephanie's the drummer. The guitar player is, I can't remember her name. I apologize. Anyways, Rusty is the drummer. Minnie is the bass player. And Crooked Kid Coat Hanger, that's it. Crooked Kid Coat Hanger. She released an acoustic track. It's a new song called Step Back. I think it's a cool song. I think it sounds good. B, it's interesting to see how the Coat Hangers build their songs up. Like many of the great punk bands, including Black Flag, they start slow and acoustic and then speed up and make it electric to give it that extra punch. And I thought this track was cool. And I'm very excited to see what the Coat Hangers put out next. And I think what's very interesting about the Coat Hangers is they've got a very unique angle. They've got a unique angle in that it is punk. They deliberately come from a female perspective, but I think they make commentary that's on things from a female perspective that I think sometimes rock and roll doesn't accept. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of Joan Jett's thing. Is I don't know. I just think they're cool. I'm rambling.
They're very cool and like pretty garagey too. I sometimes wonder, like, why aren't they as big as, like, Ty Segall, which is the way I say it, Ty Segall, or, like, King Gizzard. Like, I think they have, like, some of, like, what's, like, considered, like, very cool and, like, combustible and, like, kind of, yeah, like, spazzy but cool, like, that stuff that all those garage kids are into. So I'm surprised that this band isn't bigger. I think they're great.
I got nothing to add there, John. Your love of this band warms my heart.
I love it, and you have got to see, like, live. They are just savage. I wonder if they're too unique. Like there's no other band that's. I mean, they're kind of, you know, a little bit like Joan Jett, a little bit like the Distillers, but you know, they're not copies. Like Haley, do you think they're too unique, and that's why, because people can't fit them into a box. Like that's why they're not, like, you know, Rancid Part Two or whatever, something like that.
I wonder, because, like, right, they've changed a lot over the years, right? Because they were, like, more jokey when they started, and then, like you're saying, just, like, straight-up punky for a while. And now I think, like, that last full-length was more garagey than the other stuff that they put out. So I wonder if it's that, if they're just, like, still, I don't know, yeah, just experimenting with different sounds. I don't know if that makes it harder to figure out, like, for... you know, who exactly your audience is. I don't know. I'm sort of just spinning right now. I'm not sure. I think they're super cool, and I haven't seen them live, but I've heard they're amazing. So yeah, I'm not sure why everyone's not, like, checking out this band.
Well, hopefully. How great was that full length? That full length was so good. You know what I mean? Like, what were some of the big hits on that? Like, Dropout, Down, like, I'm just naming hits. Anyway, Coat Hangers are friggin' amazing, and I think that maybe what it is, you know, I mean, they're very punk, if you ask me, but they don't play to, like, you know, the boots and braces scene or the leather jacket scene, you know, but they don't really play to, like, the all-indie scene either. They kind of just do their own thing, and I think everybody should love them. Adam, wait, speaking of things everybody should love, do you have a song that everybody should love?
Oh, everybody should get into Jock Tears. So Jock Tears is a band out of Vancouver. It is a four-piece, features members of, I don't know if bands that too many people would have heard from. The most prominent one is it features the former bassist of Tough Age in it. But it's a four-piece. The whole shtick on Jock Tears' first full-length, which is called Bad Boys, is that they're singing about the fact that big burly sports people can cry too. And they're doing this in this mix of really fun, sort of like Ramonesy pop punk and some very Vancouver Mint Records twee sounds that would have fit right in if you were listening to like Cub and Mao and those bands back in the day. So this is a song more on the Ramonesy end from Jock Tears, from their full length. I'm going to play the title tracks. This is called Bad Boys. It is from Jock Tears.
Jocks was doing an Inner Circle cover of Bad Boys, as famously featured on Cops. Adam, like, do you watch Cops? Did you enjoy Cops back in the 90s?
Cops was one of those, you know, when you're young and you would watch a show and then it would end, and then the show after you didn't actually want to watch, but you would be intimately familiar with like the first 5 minutes of, because you'd just be trying to escape from the TV. Or that's just me. But when I was young, Cops was always on. I feel like Cops was on after The Simpsons when I was young. And it was just, you know, it was like, ugh, this is on now. And, you know, you're scrambling around trying to find the remote to turn it off. So I don't think I ever sat through an episode of Cops, but I'm fully aware of Cops.
I love how when anybody says the show Cops, they don't say Cops, they say Cops. You know, like every
yeah,
letter
you gotta,
is Cops.
Well, it's very capitalized. Like
I used to love Cops when I was like 12, and now whenever I watch it, it kind of bums me out. I'm like, they're totally violating that guy's civil rights. Haley Bullitt, we'll give you the final word. Cops, pro or con, should we bring it back, or should we let Cops sail off into the ocean like we did Family Matters?
No, this is the part where I have to admit, I didn't own a TV in those years and have absolutely no frame. I mean, I think I also would sometimes be at friends' houses watching The Simpsons, and I remember like the theme song. So yeah, I don't know. Was it a theme song, or was it just like, I remember the logo coming in the all caps like you referenced.
What a lot of people don't know is the theme song was by a band called Inner Circle. Inner Circle was a reggae group that had a guy called Jacob Miller, who was actually a very famous reggae singer. And
oh, yeah, it was Bad Boys. Okay, right, of course.
And the funny thing, like Cops is like the super cheesy song, and Inner Circle used to have like tons of credit. They kind of traded in their cred for dollars. So listen, everybody's got to make a choice in life, and sometimes you keep your cred, and sometimes you make millions and millions off a show about drunk people getting arrested. Anyways, Haley Bullitt, thank you for being on the podcast. It was a real ball to have you on, and maybe you'll be back sometime again. How about that?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Well, we'd love to have you back on. Adam White, any last words for the listeners about how to not get arrested by the cops, or how to get arrested by the cops, or anything along those lines?
I mean, you shouldn't commit crimes in places where the cops are going to find you. That's just obvious. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad traits, you go to school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? If you get hot, then you must get cool. Bad boys, what you gonna do? Or what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? You chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one. You chuck it on your mother and you chuck it on your father. You chuck it on your brother and you chuck it on your sister. You chuck it on that one and you chuck it on me. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Nobody now giving no break. Police now giving no break. That old soldier man now give you no break. Not even your IG now give you no break. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do?
Reflection comes and reflection goes. I know sometimes you wanna let go.
The Punk News Podcast is recorded live on location at the Punk News Podcast Hovercraft office with the men and women of the Punk News team. All suspects are totally guilty.